Oh, hey, I'm Coco, and welcome to our talk show, Single and Too Tired to Mingle. We'll be talking about relationships with ourselves, our exes, our kids, and other important beings. So stay tuned. Hi, Nazmul.
Hello.
Thank you for joining me here today on our show, Single and Too Tired to Mingle. And we'll talk about relationships.
Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, you're welcome. So, Nazmul, you're a coach and mentor to those who are going through different life challenges. And you work as a guide, a healer, and also a shaman.
Yeah, pretty much.
You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so I think I work in different guises, so I have a professional role in the city. Mm-hmm. Adjunct to that, I work with men and women. Mm-hmm. A lot of the coaching work I do is with men, predominantly now. I've done coaching work with women in the past, and a lot of my healing-type work is predominantly more with women than with men. Mm-hmm. It just depends on
it's
the calling.
It's a little difference. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, and I guess from a coaching perspective, it's more around working with men who are struggling with self-worth issues, mm-hmm. who are quite lost in life, mm-hmm. who have had significant struggles in life, either professionally, in relationships, predominantly it's around relationships. That's why people come, because they've had too many failings in life, mm-hmm. in that department, and they finally decide they want to do something about it. Mm-hmm. Or the same problem keeps on repeating itself. Mm-hmm. So therefore they come and seek me out.
Okay.
And I'd say I work quite deeply with them rather than working on the superficial pieces. It's more on what the root causes of the problems are.
Okay. So the Grant study is a study that was done at Harvard Medical School, and it was a longitudinal study for 75 years where they tracked kids and then into adulthood to see what makes us tick in life, what makes us happy. And they realized that actually it was the quality of our relationships in life that made our life meaningful and happier, which was actually a surprise to them. So I love that we're going to be talking about that today. So really important. And I have to admit that it was tricky to put you kind of like in the box as to what we're going to be talking about, because you have such a breadth of character and experience. So we're going to try and find just like a little bit of information from you today, but there's much, much more that we can find out about you maybe another time.
Sure.
So your calling is basically supporting men and women in their inner wellness journey, meaning that if they're struggling any aspects of life, they can kind of come to you. And you work with them to create kind of like a lasting change that works on their patterns and beliefs that maybe no longer serve. So maybe walk us through that a little bit and let us know what it means to have patterns that no longer serve.
Sure.
Yeah.
So the people I work with, anyone we come in contact with in life, they're always a reflection of us. So I'd say the people I work with are experiencing the challenges I've experienced in my life in mm-hmm. the past and I've worked through mm-hmm. at a very deep level. And that's why I know for change to happen, it needs to happen at the root cause mm-hmm. of whatever is going on. So whatever might display itself might be a symptom, mm-hmm. but that symptom has a root cause. It might be a belief, it might be a pattern. We can go into that a bit more.
Okay.
But in terms of the people I work with, both men and women from a coaching perspective, it's people who've had struggles in life, who've had certain challenges, who've had certain failings that have happened all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. that have caused an eruption in their life and create a lot of pain. Mm-hmm. And one of the things we as humans, sometimes we need a lot of pain to take us from where we are okay. to where we really need to be. And that's when people come to me.
So pain is the driver of change.
Pain can be one of the greatest catalysts for change.
Okay.
It certainly was for me, and it certainly is for a lot of people that I work with. I think there are people who dabble in and dip the toe in with personal development work, but change doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. And they might be going to the same therapist time and time again.
Right.
Going on the same hamster wheel, repeating the same subject and right. the same problem. That doesn't create change.
Right.
And I did that for a while myself, so I know.
Okay.
I went to talking therapists for a good few years.
Right.
Until the proverbial shit hit the fan in my case.
So talk us through that a little bit. So 3 or 4 years you had a dramatic change happen in your life. And then when this happened, you weren't feeling supported with your then partner. And so then you had a collision of two events happen. And that kind of brought about where you are today. So walk us through those two events and what had to happen in your life to make that breakthrough.
There's a lot there.
That's okay. Let's go through the basics to start.
We'll go through the basics. Roughly 4 years ago, just literally the first week into the COVID lockdown in the UK, my father passed away with COVID.
Right.
Okay. And so he was in hospital for a week. I was the last person to see him in hospital, and we were not allowed to see him. And he was in a special COVID ward where no one was allowed. And he was taken to accident and emergency on a respirator and in a really bad way. So I got to see him, thankfully. But then I was in hospital till about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and I just was too tired. Mm. And the hospital promised me they'd let me back in. So I went home. I thought I'd have a bit of a rest, have a shower, and then come back home. Come back to the hospital. But it didn't happen. Oh. And then spent the next few days in a panic state, thinking, has he got COVID? Has he not got COVID? We're really hoping he doesn't have COVID. Mm. Initially, we were told he doesn't have COVID 2 days later.
Right.
Then on the third day, we were told he's got COVID. And what was really challenging is the day I left him in the hospital, the nurses didn't want me to leave.
Right.
Because they thought, they were unclear how much longer he had.
Right.
Because it was in a pretty bad way. So that was all going on. He passed away on a Tuesday.
Right.
Literally 1 week later on a Thursday, my ex-partner and I had quite an eruption in our relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So my father passed away on a Tuesday. The eruption happened the following Thursday, and that was the end of the relationship. She literally moved in 2 months prior.
Right.
We'd been in a relationship for 3.5 years. This is a person that, whilst I'd been married before and have had a family previously, that relationship ended 10 years prior.
Right.
So this particular person I thought was the love of my life. And I saw myself creating a family with this person, creating a home. She'd finally moved in. It's exactly what I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Literally 2 months later. And the was, well, my father passing away. And this particular person not having the appropriate skills to be a supportive partner at that time.
Okay.
And also I was dealing with what I didn't understand was in the lead up to my father passing, from that moment when he went into the hospital for the final time, in those few days, a lot of my own historic anger and trauma from my own childhood was coming up. I didn't understand it. And when I say trauma was coming up, it wasn't in an outwardly behavior way. It was just internally a lot of anger was coming up, a lot of frustration was coming up.
Right.
And I was having this conflict. And I was having this conflict internally where it's my father, he's on his deathbed. I should really be sad for him and all of that.
Right.
But actually, I wasn't sad. I was very angry. I was angry to this man who was very abusive to me when I was younger. And in the latter days of my father being, so my father had dementia for a couple of years.
Right.
He needed going to care. And whenever I used to go and see him, I used to struggle with him being in care because I felt that was a failing on my part as a son, that I should be able to look after him. I didn't have the right skills, tools, capacity to do any of that.
For sure.
And now in his dying moments, I'm feeling anger. I'm feeling anger for all the times he abused me in a physical way, in a mental way.
Mm.
Unfortunately, both mom and dad were very, very physically abusive. So I didn't have anywhere to escape. And then at school I was bullied.
Mm-hmm.
I was a very bright, intelligent kid.
Which is actually quite a common pattern, I think. Don't you think? Kind of, you come from home abuse, then because you're carrying that, you're abused in another system. And often it's bright kids as well.
Potentially. Certainly my experience is I had nowhere to go.
Yeah.
Within home, there wasn't an escape.
Yeah, that's
externally, actually. At school, there was no escape. And so also, while I was still in secondary school, every day from 5 till 8 in the evening and half day Saturdays to go to religious studies as well.
Right.
So I had a very full timetable, and there was also no escape from that.
Okay.
So it was quite a
very structured childhood.
It was very structured, but also I benefited from that. However, there were certain challenges.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, those challenges had quite a significant imprint.
Okay.
And we can talk about that later, yeah, in terms of the development patterns that happen in people. So a lot of that was coming up. The anger was coming up. And then after he passed away, I got COVID. And I'm lying there on the sofa. My ex-partner is then working from home. And basically, I'm lying there with really bad chest pains. And I'm lying on the sofa, and I'm actually having visions of seeing my dad's last moments without having seen him, seeing him in the
right,
in his bed when I said goodbye to him. And I was feeling like, shit, am I going to die?
For sure, yeah.
And that's what was going through my head. And it's like, okay, my dad's just died with COVID, so I'm going to die with COVID. And then I've got this person in my house who isn't actually...
Which is quite nice that she was working from home at the time, right? You would think, no?
I thought for our relationship it would be amazing.
Yeah.
It's to be honest, it's exactly what I wanted.
Yeah, that's what I would have imagined, yeah.
However, that wasn't the case.
Right.
She was very... What I understand now, because I didn't understand it then, her way to cope was to detach.
Okay.
She was an avoidant.
Okay.
So her way of dealing with situations was to ignore them happening, pretend they weren't there, and carry on as normal.
Right.
So she was carrying on as a happy self, getting on with work. And I got this feeling that I needed to be strong.
Okay.
And I couldn't show weakness.
Okay.
And the day I got the news that my father had passed away in hospital, she came to give me a hug. But it felt like such a disingenuous hug.
Okay.
I couldn't accept the hug.
So kind of like a scripted hug. So situation A, you need to hug this person and then move on in life.
Kind of.
Okay.
And I felt myself closing up.
For sure.
Quite significantly. Yeah. And the telling thing that day was I called up my ex-wife, who spent a few years living with my parents. And we had a son together. And we have a son together. So I called to tell him the news, and I broke down talking to him and talking to her. Whereas I couldn't show emotion to this partner. And part of that is, I think we'll touch on it as well, part of that is with this particular partner, I felt I was the broken one.
Yeah.
So I needed to be strong.
Right, okay.
And I needed to show that I'm the man. I've got my emotions together. I know how to lead. Blah, 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 blah. All the, I'd say, incorrect narrative that we might have in society about what a man is. I had all of that.
Okay.
Some of that came from her telling me that I'm the problem and I'm the one that needs to sort myself out.
We like doing that, right? We like telling
other
people instead of looking within. Huh?
Yeah. And so in this roughly weekish period, she created a lot of difficulties for me. I got to the point where I was feeling really unsafe in my own home.
Okay.
And there literally was no escape because we weren't allowed out.
Right.
And unfortunately, she created significant arguments that were triggered from petty situations. And I say petty situations in the sense that I don't think she knew how to cope with the situation of what was going on.
Okay.
So it was her way of eliciting attention.
Sounds like a lot longer than a week. It's like you had your father die, you had COVID. And then all of a sudden this was going on like in 1 week.
It was an intense week.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Like, what do you mean? I'm thinking this is months. It's actually like a couple of days, right?
Yeah, literally.
Is it for the better ultimately? Like if you do have that happen in that short amount of time and you can deal with it, or is it just too much on all levels?
So at the time, it was too much on all levels. Mm-hmm. Father passing, I hadn't had time to even process what was going on there. I got COVID.
Right.
Father passed with COVID. I think I'm going to die with COVID. I've got a partner who, whilst not being supportive, is actually being very counterproductive,
mm-hmm.
being argumentative, being difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And normally I had the capacity to cope with those challenges.
Mm-hmm.
I was the more put together mm-hmm. in that way. I didn't have the capacity.
Okay.
And it got to the point where she was creating significant arguments and I was reacting to those arguments.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I reacted to one argument and that was enough for me.
Right, okay.
Because what she was trying to do was create a fight, and I mean a physical fight. And that for me was a significant warning sign. And for me, having COVID, not having the capacity for physical or mental strength, my father passing, I hadn't even processed any of that because I was still in a state of shock. Having this person who's constantly like poking a stick at me, it's like poking a stick in a balloon. It's going to burst sooner or later. Okay. Trying to get that reaction. She got that reaction. And the reaction was, well, no, I need you to go.
Mm-hmm.
She was very reluctant to go. She didn't want to go.
Okay.
She still had her own apartment. She was paying rent on there. She made a multitude of excuses. And I knew in my heart of heart that if this person stayed, the situation would only exacerbate and get worse.
Mm-hmm.
And I just couldn't cope. Physically and mentally, I was all over the place. I was broken.
Mm.
I just couldn't cope with this person being there.
Mm-hmm.
In our last argument, she basically told me if I wanted her out, I needed to call the police.
Wow. So what was her reason for staying? I mean, it was clearly not a healthy relationship.
It hadn't been healthy for a while. It was leading to that, and I think our attempts to, shall we say, save the relationship was her moving in and us working on this while being present with one another. And for me, I was overjoyed when she agreed to move in.
Yeah, for sure. Right.
Having the understanding I have now,
mm-hmm.
I recognize that was a very unhealthy relationship.
Mm-hmm.
It was a toxic relationship. We had what's defined as a trauma bond.
Mm-hmm.
She was like a, if I was a heroin addict,
mm-hmm.
she was my heroin.
Okay.
I needed that heroin.
And the other way as well?
I think so, because
she, you must have been doing something to trigger her to want to be with you as well, right?
Well, if you know about attachment theory,
mm-hmm.
in that particular relationship, I went from being secure to being anxious.
Mm-hmm. So you were secure before and then you became anxious?
Yeah, during the course of the relationship.
Right, okay.
And this is something that does happen in relationships.
Correct, yeah.
Our underlying patterns come up in relationships. And it's the most intimate person and people of that course, bring that up. So as I discovered, I had an anxious attachment and she had an avoidant attachment.
Okay. So it's a good pairing, right?
It's the perfect toxic pairing. It's that push-pull behaviour.
Correct. Yeah.
It's the yin and yang.
Yeah. We'll be talking about that on another with another guest.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
More in detail. Oh, so, cool. Yeah. All right. So thinking about men, how easy is it for men to admit they have an issue with their relationship? And is there a difference between men and women? How quickly or what needs to happen with men or women before they come to someone like you and admit that maybe they've got an issue?
I think let me tackle women first.
Okay.
Actually, in one perspective, women are easier, but also more difficult.
Okay.
And I'll tackle that as well and what I mean by that. So women tend to be the ones pushing their partner to go to therapy if they're having a difficulty in relationship settings. Men tend to be the passenger in that situation. Men are not very good at talking.
It's because women think it's actually the men's issue, an issue with the guy, so they're dragging him along.
There is part of that. There is part of that because it's the other person. It's
correct,
It's their problem.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm sure you've heard, like, if only you changed that one aspect
for
of
sure,
that person, they'd be perfect.
That's it.
But you change that one aspect.
And there's another one that
There's going to be. And there's layers. There's layers to everyone. And layers are revealed at different stages of relationships. And it also depends on what point a person is in their relationship cycle. The first couple of years is the honeymoon cycle. No one can do any wrong.
That's it.
After that, when you get roughly to the two-year stage, the veil starts peeling off. And different layers of the veil starts peeling off. And we start saying, oh, hold on. They leave the toilet seat up. That annoys me. Well, hold on. They talk too loud on the phone. Well, hold on. They breathe wrong. And it's like the list becomes never ending.
Correct.
And it's a two-way thing between men and women. And in relationships, one person experiences that earlier than the other person.
Okay.
And that can create a rupture. And it's usually at that point, it's, shall we say, a more conscious couple. And what I mean by that is people who've had experiences in relationships, who've done some work on themselves, who are self-aware. They may choose to tackle that by engaging in open conversations.
Okay.
Not the blamey type and not the you're this, you're that. It's more like, well, this is what's going on, this is what's coming up for me. And this is actually what this particular thing coming up for me represents from my past or whatever.
Okay.
And dealing with that. Now, in my experience, neither men or women are good at that.
Why is it so hard?
Because we don't have that awareness. We don't have that training.
No one teaches us that.
No one does. And also, I touched on the life cycle of relationships. Depending on what part of the life cycle of a relationship you are, it will have a completely significant different bearing. To your point, you can walk away. And when the eruption happens around 2 years, if you work through it, you can stumble through it. Like I stumbled through it.
Okay.
And this is where the power struggle stage tends to be.
Okay.
Some people never leave that power struggle stage. A lot of people tend to get married in that honeymoon phase and decide they're going to stay. And they're in very unhappy, dissatisfied relationships. The struggle still continues. They've not done any work on themselves. They're blaming each other. And in blaming each other, it becomes quite toxic. It becomes really unhealthy. Both people are really unhappy.
And does the power struggle always happen? Or is it?
Unless they work through it.
Right, okay.
And they get through the other side.
Right, okay.
But that requires working on themselves individually and also working together as a couple. It always starts with the self.
Correct.
We can't impose our beliefs, thoughts, feelings on another person. When we get into relationships, a lot of relationships come about as a result of physical infatuation. This person looks good. They smell good. The sex is great. Whatever it is. And people continue that.
Right.
And when we have sex with a person, we get chemically bonded. And then the chemistry goes all over the place. We have all these in love feelings going on.
And the brain takes it very quickly.
Well, it's heroin. Oh my God.
The brain loves it.
Yeah, exactly. And so this is what happens. This goes on, but that chemistry, right, shall we say, the chemical components of that does fade. Mm. And it's in that fading that we get to the point where actually we start seeing through
the veil. So should you be working with your partner? Let's say we anticipate a power struggle, or we anticipate that, okay, let's say 2 years of the honeymoon period. After that, we can anticipate possible issues. So whilst we still have all these amazing hormones and chemicals going through our brain and our body, does anyone ever go, actually, let's go to like a therapist and work through our potential issues before there are actual issues? Would that make sense? Or does anyone ever do that?
It would make perfect sense.
Okay.
Very rarely do people do that.
Okay.
And I know I haven't fully answered your first question.
Okay, yeah.
But this is all related. Yeah.
Correct.
People in certain relationships, they go from one relationship to another relationship. Mm-hmm. The problem repeats itself. Mm-hmm. And it's always the other person. It's not themselves.
Correct, yeah.
And the common denominator in all of those problems is that
it's yourself,
person.
Right? Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Now, we can point the finger at another person, but there's always three fingers pointing back at us. Mm. So, the right thing to do would be pairing up with someone who we have shared values with, mm-hmm. shared goals, shared interests. We see a vision together, mm-hmm. and we are seeking to co-create something together. Mm-hmm. And entering that agreement from an early stage in the relationship. So being very conscientious about who we're dating, mm-hmm. for what reason we're dating. And ideally, having those thoughts and those conversations fairly early on in the first few weeks of meeting a person, mm-hmm. before jumping into bed with them. Mm-hmm. Because as soon as we jump into bed with them...
these conversations are not going to happen.
No.
Until 2 years later.
Then they don't happen.
When there's an issue.
Yeah, and then we might find, okay, one person wants children, the other person doesn't. Mm. But we're so intertwined with this person that we can't separate from this person. Mm-hmm. And this person then becomes a drug, and we're addicted to that. And we're addicted to the problems, we're addicted to the highs and lows and the push-pull. And women are more willing to discuss the problem in the relationship, mm-hmm. and less willing to reflect on themselves, mm-hmm. I find. Mm-hmm. Men are less willing to look at the problem in the first place, mm-hmm. but once they start looking at the problem, they are more willing to do something about it.
Interesting.
However, the point where they engage with someone like me, rather than a therapist, for example, men come to me far later than women might come to me.
Right, okay.
What that then means is that particular relationship may have ended. Mm-hmm. Or it's at a point where
something significant needs to happen.
Yeah.
Before men come to you.
Yeah.
So women will come a little bit earlier.
Potentially.
Men will wait until there's like something.
That's it. And, well, something's ended. They're in a divorce case. They're mentally all over the place. And what we're really saying in this is, and fundamentally this is what happened with me, where when my father passed, I had a loss of identity of being a son.
Right.
And when the relationship with my partner, that particular partner ended, I lost the identity of being a partner.
Right.
And with that also the fantasy of the future that I created with this particular person. So that particular eruption left me in a state of complete disarray. Mm-hmm. I didn't know who I was. I didn't know who I was previously, right. as I've learned. So when events like this happen, it's a trigger. It's mm-hmm. a trigger for people to say, well, actually, right, I'm lost. I don't know what's going on. I don't know what to do with my life. Mm-hmm. I need help. What people normally do is they go to therapists, mm-hmm. and they might go to a relationship therapy, and they might go to a standard normal therapy. And I, having done that myself, mm-hmm. I also know the process, and we go on that hamster wheel.
Right.
And that's a hamster wheel that we're unable to get off of because we're not really making any progress. Therapists seem to work in a way where they support the problem rather than help a person they remove themselves from that problem so that they can find a solution and work forward.
Okay. And why is that, you think?
Sorry?
Why is that, you think? Because you think I go to a psychologist, psychiatrist, and they're going to help me deal with the problem that I have. And does this not happen? Or, like, it must do at some point, but...
I used to think that.
Okay.
So a psychiatrist will put you on meds.
Right.
Okay. And I was on antidepressants for a while, for a long, long while myself.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't been on any pharmaceutical meds for 3.5 years.
Okay.
Psychiatrists will give you meds. That's their job.
Okay.
Psychologists or psychotherapists, their training is based on, shall we say, traditional textbook.
Mm-hmm.
Based on me working with different modalities of therapists,
mm-hmm.
you can work with people who are trained in CBT who are meant to help you mm-hmm. think in a different way. Work with humanists who are quite grounded people. Work with Freudians and Jungians or whatever. Whatever the label, the approach is fundamentally, at its core, similar. You're talking.
Right.
And you're talking to find a solution. So all you're doing is going, looping the same problem.
Okay.
Now, what I needed to do was that didn't work for me.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, I was working three different therapists with three different modalities.
And even that did nothing?
No, because I had this fundamental belief I was broken and I was the problem.
Right, I see.
I needed to fix myself. And I thought the sooner I can fix myself, the sooner I can go back to this ex-partner and everything will be roses and we'll live in bliss because I'm the problem and I fix myself and hey presto, it's me.
Okay.
Sorted now. The truth of the matter is we're all responsible for our part of the relationship and this touches on. We individually need to do the work on ourselves
mm-hmm.
and then we need to do the work collectively. So when we're in a relationship, we can do all the work on ourselves. It's only in a relationship setting that the other person reflects to us our triggers, our traumas.
Mm-hmm.
And in an intimate, close relationship, that's the perfect person to do that.
Mm.
That's really their job.
Okay.
And it's our job to see that, mm-hmm. to witness that, and be the observer.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I can give you an example. Like, let's use the toilet seat example.
Okay. Very relevant to all women, I would imagine.
Well, funnily enough, it is. And it can be very triggering to some people. And
not to some people, just women.
Women. Yeah, yeah. And I've also experienced that myself. Anything I talk about, anything I support people with. Well, this is the truth. It's not that hard. But what does that signify?
Mm.
What does that symbolize?
Okay.
And it's like the toilet seat being up. Actually, it's not a difficult thing just putting the toilet seat down. Rather than having a visceral reaction. And it is a visceral reaction. Mm. And I'll go on to that.
I'm not going to deny it.
It's a trigger.
Yeah.
But what is that trigger? Mm. Where does it come from? Yeah. And this is where we talk about root cause and finding the weeds. And the toilet seat being up, okay. New partner, a new relationship, we don't care about it.
Mm.
It's like, this person's perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
5 years in, bloody heck. I've told him a million times to put that seat down. He doesn't. He doesn't listen to me.
Mm.
He doesn't care about me. He doesn't love me.
It's respect, yeah. Mm.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
Not feeling valued, correct, not feeling respected, not feeling heard, not feeling seen.
That's it.
And what wound that triggers? I'm not good enough. Where does that come from? Childhood. Not being seen by parents, not being heard by parents, not being validated by parents, not being loved by parents.
Interesting, hey?
Yeah.
Got a bizarre event that triggers all of that.
And this happens in microseconds.
Mm.
And it's really like when we talk about these things, that, like using this as an example, like what's coming up for that person, what's being triggered?
I have a question.
Go for it.
Why do guys just not do it? It's not that hard.
It's not that hard.
So what is the men's perspective then on not doing that, if you've asked them to do it?
Well, they're not doing
many
it.
Many times.
They're not doing it out of spite.
Okay, fine, but why would they just not do it if they know that it's a thing that, also hygienically, it annoys you?
There's a few different ways of approaching this.
Mm-hmm.
if we do the surface level argument, mm-hmm. it's not difficult. Why don't you put the seat down?
But we didn't put it up in the first place.
Which is fair enough. However, that particular man in his singledom
yeah.
probably had the seat up always.
Mm-hmm, correct, yeah.
And for him, when he needed to put it down, it wasn't a problem putting it down. When he's being told to mm-hmm. do that, that's a different matter.
Okay.
He's being commanded.
Is it told versus asked?
It's how it's received.
Okay.
Like once or twice being asked, fine.
Mm-hmm.
After a while, it becomes quite annoying.
Yeah.
Quite repetitive.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what's the big deal
mm-hmm.
with the toilet seat being up?
Mm-hmm.
But what's going on underneath for her is he doesn't value me.
Yeah.
He doesn't respect me. And what lies underneath that is the wound of I'm not good enough.
Right.
And then that's projected onto the other person. Sure. He's not good enough.
Yeah.
Okay. Whatever we've got within ourselves,
yeah.
we always project that onto another person.
Yeah,
it's just how
we
seem to work.
Mm-hmm.
Until we get to the point where we're more self-aware
mm-hmm.
and we've done some work and we can see that projection and we can work with that projection.
And take it back a little bit.
Yeah, and using that example,
yeah.
A self-aware person, I think, well, actually, yes, I know I've asked him to put the seat down. Keeps on leaving it up. Actually, it's not such a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not a triggering for that person, it will have no effect.
Yeah.
Whereas if it's a triggering thing, it will have some effect. Now, the person receiving those comments,
mm-hmm.
if it's not a triggering thing for them, they're not going to react.
Mm-hmm.
It will bounce off them. If it's
right.
a triggering event,
yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Then they might feel not valued, they might feel not respected, they might not feel heard. They might also feel not good enough.
Yeah.
And no matter what I do for her, it's not good enough.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Just leaving the toilet seat up is such a big deal.
Mm.
That creates such an argument.
Yeah.
It's these small little things, these create fractures.
Mm-hmm.
And those fractures, if left unresolved,
yeah.
that's what creates separation.
Yeah.
And then there comes an explosion, and then if that happens enough times for men
mm-hmm.
and the pain is strong enough,
yeah.
then they'll come to me. Okay. And then we'll work through. And a lot of people come to me as a result of relationship breakdowns.
Yeah.
But actually what's going on is they're lacking their own self-worth because this relationship was broken down.
Mm-hmm.
Their whole identity was wrapped up in the relationship. Mm-hmm. Their relationship as a partner, their relationship as a parent. I know we're focusing on relationships, but similar happens with professional aspects. A person mm. might lose their job. And their identity is wrapped up in them being a CEO of a company.
Mm. Yeah.
So lost.
Yeah.
Because their whole identity is formed around that.
Mm.
But actually what we then do is we peel back that.
Yeah.
To understand really why that aspect of their life is such a strong component of their identity.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing so, we work on finding their own core values, their own limiting beliefs,
mm-hmm.
their own dysfunctional patterns and behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we work through to dissolve, release. Some of that is talking based, some of that is somatic based. So
mm-hmm.
one thing men are very bad at, very, very bad, mm-hmm. is feeling the feelings. And this is where it's actually easier working with women.
Right.
And this is where doing the more healing type work with women is so much easier.
Right.
So, like, I do tantric body work
mm-hmm.
and breath work, and it's all about releasing trauma from the body.
Right.
And it's about eliciting some of that trauma and bringing it to the surface at an energetic level
right.
to release it. We don't need to re-engage with the story of it. We don't need to re-engage with any of the, shall we say, the energetic components of it. It's
mm-hmm.
not re-traumatizing. It's more just allowing something that's blocked in the system to pass.
So
it's like,
so one thing I heard you say quite eloquently
mm-hmm.
is that we are 100% responsible for the 50% of our relationship. How readily is that understood?
It's not understood.
It's actually quite intuitive, right?
It's simple but cryptic all at the same time.
Right.
Now, I'll give you my example
okay.
where that particular relationship that I've mentioned, it was a very significant relationship to me.
Mm-hmm.
I took 100% of the responsibility for the failings of that relationship.
Right.
And somehow I took the responsibility for fixing that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So when there were fractures happening, it was me that was going and doing the groveling to try and fix things.
Mm-hmm.
It was me that actually wanted to go to couples therapy.
Right.
That was a complete waste of time, by the way.
So you actually went?
Mm.
Okay.
Yeah. I coerced my ex-partner into going.
Okay.
It took quite a lot of work, but we did go and we had a few sessions and actually wasn't very helpful or productive because she wasn't.
I think two people need to want therapy before it works, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
She wasn't invested.
Right, okay.
So at that particular point in time, I was thinking that it's my responsibility to fix this.
Mm-hmm.
But in my journey, I've learned actually both parties, there's two people in a relationship
mm-hmm.
and both people are equally responsible
mm-hmm.
for making sure the relationship succeeds
mm-hmm.
or it fails. And that might work in different balances like a seesaw from time to time, but ultimately we're both equally responsible.
Okay.
And so I would say I'm 100% responsible for my 50% of the relationship. And that message takes time for people to accept and mm-hmm. for it to land, especially when they've been told, it's your fault, it's your fault.
Yeah.
And that might also be a script. That's a script from their past, their childhood. And because it's embedded in them, they believe it.
So let's just go back to, so we've talked about a little bit how you deal and or how you heal and work with women. What about men? What's different?
So a lot of the, like the energy work and the tantric body work and those sorts of things, I only do that with women.
Mm-hmm.
Men, they're less receptive to that sort of stuff. Men, it's a task getting them to feel in the first place.
Right. So how do you do that?
So quite basic to begin with, just getting them to touch themselves in their heart area
right.
or feeling their feet or feeling the air around their face.
Right.
So just feeling sensations.
Okay.
So they start becoming familiar with sensations of their body.
Right.
And then going deeper, like, so when they're feeling really anxious, when they're feeling frustrated, seeing where that feeling is.
Mm-hmm.
And then working with that feeling to allow that feeling to pass, for it to come up, for mm-hmm. it to be released. Holding men in a safe space, in a safe container, to allow them to cry.
Okay.
To vent, to show anger. And this is one of the things, men don't have a good relationship with all of their emotional tools. Anger is one that's actually repressed, and part of the repression is because of the stigma around displaying anger.
So,
however, anger is a healthy emotion as long as it's expressed in a healthy way.
Right.
Same with all emotions.
Yeah.
No emotion is rejected. However, the experience men might have had, they can't cry, they can't show weakness.
So does that start in a childhood when they're told boys don't cry, boys are strong, boys are boys?
Yeah, boys don't cry. Or they might have cried.
Right.
And their parents said, don't cry.
Yeah.
Or told them off crying.
Okay.
Or they may have wanted to display signs of anger.
Right.
But the parent wasn't able to hold space for that.
Right.
Because the parent had their own
anger issues.
Yeah. And the truth is, parents, whatever underlying issues are going on with the parents, they do imprint that onto the child.
Right.
Unfortunately. Good and bad.
Mm-hmm.
And then when this child grows up, whatever patterning they've seen in their childhood
mm-hmm.
and whatever they've experienced, they take that into their relationship.
Right.
And if you've got two different people coming from two different backgrounds with two different home environments, with two different scripts,
mm-hmm.
trying to make a home together. And it doesn't go like that. It goes like... and it's just...
We don't hopefully meet in the middle somewhere, right?
No, and this is the thing where to meet in the middle, I don't think there's ever a meeting in the middle in a proverbial sense.
Right.
However, there's a meeting of values. There's a meeting of energies.
Mm-hmm.
And those energies can be quite destructive.
Right.
And the point of that destruction is we're meant to learn and we're meant to grow.
Mm-hmm.
Assuming we're mature enough to use that
mm-hmm.
as a learning tool. For example, we might be in a relationship with someone and they're behaving in a certain way. However, the trigger that's coming up for us it's our trigger. We might be triggered by someone, however, it's our trigger. So it's an opportunity for us to see what's coming up and how we work with it. And I don't think men, independently on their own, are very good at doing that.
Right.
They've not been taught, taught the skill sets to do it.
I can imagine. No. Even women almost aren't, let alone men.
Well, women have a better connection with feeling.
Right.
They're more intuitive, they're more sensory.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the difference between men are more logical, brain-orientated people, whereas women are more emotional beings. And that's fine. It's having that understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And also, like, there's a responsibility on women to understand that, okay, they might be having an emotional moment, and that emotion will pass and it will subside, and actually this particular person in front of them, they dearly love and care about. So what they might have said in that moment, maybe they shouldn't be saying that. Maybe they need to do some work.
Yeah.
Or if they're getting really angry towards that person, really, is that misplaced anger?
Mm.
Where does that anger come from, and what work do they need to do to dissolve that anger?
Okay, so my question then would be, how important is being in a relationship? Is it, are we happy on our own, or is it important to be in a relationship, or should we not be in a relationship if we don't know how to handle one yet, or do we even know that we do know how to handle one?
We don't know we can handle one or can't handle one until we're in a relationship.
Right, okay.
And that's the truth. We're social creatures.
Yeah.
We coexist.
Mm-hmm.
We can exist in a bubble of our own.
Mm-hmm.
And some people are very good at that.
Mm-hmm.
Some people, it's a coping mechanism because they have a hard time dealing with other people.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are actually very happy on their own. Mm-hmm. It depends. So it's a person who likes being on their own or is scared of being on their own, but is on their own.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a difference between the
two. Okay.
And also, why is a person seeking a relationship? Is it because they're too scared of being on their own?
Mm-hmm.
Are they unhappy about being on their own? So therefore, they'll go from one relationship to another, and there's no gap in between. Right. So there's no gap to rest and recover and learn and grow. Because it's in that gap that we actually grow.
Yeah.
We don't always need to feel ready to be in a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
However, if certain things have come up in a relationship, it's sensible to take a little bit of time,
mm-hmm.
do some reflecting, do some growing, maybe get some independent help.
Right.
To work on whatever's come up. Even like just having, maybe just having a few therapy sessions with a therapist, just something at the end of a relationship, look, it's ended, mm-hmm. I'm going through this.
Mm-hmm.
Just allow some of that to settle before jumping into another relationship.
And carrying all the issues for someone else to fix.
Well, this is the thing. Unconsciously, what we do is we pair ourselves with someone who we might have a component missing within us,
mm-hmm.
unconsciously. We're seeking that person to fill that void.
Mm.
The truth is that another person can't fill that void.
Yeah.
The best that person can do is support.
Mm-hmm.
However, that support can only go a certain way.
Yeah.
You can't fill a fractured well.
Yeah.
No matter how much you pour in there.
So, in your opinion and experience, how do we keep the quality and longevity in a romantic relationship? Because the point is longevity. I think everyone's seeking for that, right? Or most people.
Longevity comes from... We're talking healthy relationships.
We are talking healthy relationship, yes.
Yeah.
We want to be happy and healthy.
Right. Historically,
mm-hmm.
in relationships where people were married, marriages were for convenience.
Correct.
Happiness was derived from necessity.
Right.
Now I think in the day of swiping and apps, it's a completely different mindset. So with that in mind, when two people come together, they're coming together with the right reasons, with the right motivation. Mm-hmm. So this is where having common values, common goals. Still being independent people, having their own independent lives, having their own interests, having their own life, having their own sets of friends.
Mm-hmm.
Both people individually.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a Venn diagram. They've got their piece. Each person's got their each pieces, but then there's a common bit.
Right.
And the common bit is shared values, shared goals.
Mm-hmm.
They might have a pet together.
Mm-hmm.
They might have children together. Now, children is a different thing where have they had children by accident
mm-hmm.
and therefore they're stuck together?
Mm-hmm.
Or have they had children out of a state of love and it's an evolution of that relationship.
Right.
That's less common, unfortunately. Or is it to save a relationship and actually things get worse?
Yeah, that's another topic for a different day. So let's just talk about how do we keep, let's say that things are kind of in place.
So this is where...
Because nowadays also, like with age, you have different relationships. So one, you start out together, you have kids and it's a family and it's one type. You have, I don't know, as you get older, maybe they have kids separately. And now how do you make that work? That's a completely different relationship. Or you have one of the partners had kids, the other one doesn't have a child. How do you deal with that? So I think all of these three different things have different mindsets and probably different issues relating to that.
And I totally agree with that. Again, it comes down to if a person is choosing to be in a relationship with someone, why are they choosing to be in the relationship with that particular person? How are they aligned? So this is where really what I'm saying is it's compatibility over chemistry.
Right.
Chemistry subsides. Like we see the same face day in, day out. We don't see their beauty anymore. We see everything else other than that. The reasons why we chose to be with them in the first place, they stop being the reasons why we want to be with them.
But do you choose not to see their beauty anymore? Because if you chose every morning to see that, that's a different story than just kind of taking it for granted. And I think that's an issue. I think expectations and taking things for granted, where actually if you decide to not do that, it maybe doesn't go down the grey route.
If it was as simple as that, people would do that.
Now,
let's use the example of two people going through a stressful moment in their relationship. They can use as many affirmations as they want about each other and their relationship with them as themselves and themselves to try and shift their mind. The truth is, when there's resentment, when there's a fracture, unresolved resentment, unresolved fracture, that's what creates the problem.
Okay.
And until the superficial symptoms are talked about and the root cause of that dealt with, there's not a coming together. And it's not a simple case of apologizing and then carrying on doing the same thing. But it's a case of apologizing, dealing with what's fundamentally at the root of this problem so that then the behavior changes.
Right.
And it's in that behavior change, whether it's the man or the woman in the relationship, when we show those behavior changes, it takes time for the other party to register those.
Right.
But they start happening, and over time, we regain a bit of trust. What I'm really saying is, in that fracture, over time, trust gets broken.
Right.
In different aspects. There comes a point where it's so broken that trying to bring them back together is really quite a challenge. Another thing that we haven't touched on is polarities in relationships.
Right.
We all have, both men and women, have masculine and feminine qualities within us. When we enter a relationship, we may create a facade as well of who we are. And with the veil dropping, that facade drops. And then we're like, hold on, this person was super confident. They were super outgoing. Now all they want to do is sit at home and drink beer and eat crisps.
Right.
That's not what I signed up for.
Right.
So there's a signing up bit. And also like within the masculine and feminine things, we may show a more masculine quality or more feminine quality at the beginning of the relationship. So in relationships, we always have to have that energetic balance of masculine and feminine. We need to have that within ourselves and we need to have that in the relationship setting. And so when the polarity changes, when the man becomes more feminine and when the woman becomes more masculine and they're fixed in that, that's not the natural position for both those people.
Right.
So it just doesn't work. And trying to shift those polarities is actually quite hard once they become embedded.
Right.
And what happens in relationships is men drift more to the feminine qualities because they think that's what's needed to make the relationship work. Because the partner's saying, you're not doing this, you're not doing that. You're not talking about your feelings enough. You're not taking the bin, whatever. You're not being a provider. Whereas... So in this day and age, both men and women work. And in the workplace, it's a very masculine, energy-orientated place. And so when a woman goes out to work, even if she's a feminine woman in her feminine energy, in the workplace, she might go into a masculine energy. When she comes home, if she's not able to switch back to her feminine energy, what you've then got is two men clashing, and that doesn't work. And equally, when the man's very much in his feminine,
right,
you've got two women clashing, and that doesn't work. You need to have that balance. So to find longevity, really, it works with working on ourselves, to find balance within ourselves, and finding wholeness within ourselves.
Right.
Because then we're not seeking the other person to fulfill us,
yeah,
to validate us. And actually, we're quite content whether the other person accepts us or they don't, because we accept ourselves.
Mm.
In doing so, we might find that that particular relationship is not the right relationship.
Mm.
And so therefore, when we part, it's on a completely different footing.
Right.
If we choose to stay together, we will only choose to stay together with that person because they've also evolved, they've done that work themselves. Right. And therefore, when we do stay together, the relationship is something completely evolved, it's something quite new. And I'd say that's when real love really comes through to the surface.
Page, eh?
Yeah. This is where you've had the caterpillar and the chrysalis and then the butterfly, but this is a joint thing that's formed.
Very sweet. Okay. With all that we've talked about and all there is still to talk about, are there maybe one or two or three key takeaways that you could give our viewers?
I would say for those who are in relationships and want to continue to be in that relationship, if there are problems in the relationship, maybe question yourself as to why you want to continue in that relationship with that particular person. What it is about them that you value. And what it is about yourself that you value and where those values line up. Now, if you've got a mismatch between what you want and what the other person wants, then that might not work, and therefore examine that. However, if it's something you want to invest in, then spend that quality time investing in yourself and what's going on for you, and then invest some time and money together, getting some help, whether I would suggest with a relationship coach who's versed in helping couples, and taking it from there.
Okay. Thank you so much, Nazmul. That was amazing. Really fascinating insights.
Thanks for having me.